The views expressed in this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. This is 91.7 FM WHUS Stores. I am Peddlin' Ron, and you are listening to Bicycle Talk. It is Monday, March 27th, 2023, to be rebroadcast on Wednesday, March 29th, at our regular times on 91.7 FM WHUS and WHUS.org. Welcome to Bicycle Talk with my friendly co-host, the lovely Dr. Fran Storch. She may be in and out. She's having a little back problem this morning, so she's a little bit, she's a little under the weather for the moment. She got through her podcast, but we may or may not see her, so don't worry. But if you have a comment and you want to leave it on the Bicycle Talk Facebook page, I may be able to address it. Maybe Fran will catch in a little later on. We'll see. But please feel free to comment if you would. Bicycle Talk is a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you'd like to comment, again, you can comment below. Or if you're listening to this on a podcast, you can simply send me an email at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. You can also listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on iTunes, Spotify, FMRadioFree.com, or your favorite podcast outlet, whatever happens to have us there. So please feel free to tune in. Ron's Rant of the Week. We start on a sad note for we UConn fans. You'll notice I'm wearing a UConn Huskies basketball t-shirt again today because, you know, we live in UConn country. So, major bummer, the women are out. They had a tough game against Ohio State. Tip of the cap to Ohio State for being able to figure them out. They were on a roll right now, and I thought they were going to go a lot further. But anyway, it's still a great season for all of us up here, and we love you, UConn women, and we love you, UConn men, and we'll talk about that in a little bit, too. So, let's see. Rants of the week. Got a couple of them here. The UDH. Anyone know what a UDH is? Well, it's called a Universal Derailleur Hanger, and it's something that's been developed by SRAM, and it's basically eliminating the rear derailleur hanger, which should have happened decades ago. But no, instead, everyone decided to come up with their own design of hanger for their own design of bicycle, and there was nothing universal about it whatsoever. So tip of the cycling cap to SRAM for coming up with an idea. Now comes the bad news. The bad news is you have to have a specific frame of which to attach it to. More in the show. We'll get there. And finally, do I need to say it? Take the Pedal and Ron Challenge. Park your motorized vehicle once a week and ride your bike instead. Our time has come. Your health, fitness, and your planet are all begging you to change your evil ways. There's a post on my Facebook post. You might want to take a look at that. Bicycle Talk on Facebook. Take a look at the picture that's there that goes along with the statement I just made. I think it kind of answers everything, but we'll go on to more of that later on. So on a positive side, all right, moving forward here to the positive side, I had the fortune to join the media team for the Natchog Epic Gravel Fondo this weekend. What a pleasure. It was so cool. I hosted two pre-ride race events on Saturday, and I got to announce and participate in Sunday's almost sold-out event. Huge event. Almost 800 riders. Incredible. Way cool. So the other cool thing was, first of all, a big shout-out to Richard Fries. Richard, you are the promoter of New England. You are a good guy, and you do more for cycling than any other promoter out there. That may be an overstatement, but I'm going for it. A pleasure to be a part of your team this year. That was such a blast. I also got to ride in the Express Ride, which was still 32 miles. So it was a, you know, it had some miles to it, and it had some really greasy, fun stuff to ride in. And this was a gravel ride, if you don't know, but way cool. Boy, did I have a lot of fun there. So that was really, really fun. And I'm glad I got a chance to be a part of the team. And again, big shout out to Richard Freese. Good job, Richard. And let's see, what else do I have on the positive side? I got a couple of things here. I know it's more basketball. Yeah, UConn Huskies. But the UConn men are advancing to the Final Four. Big shout out to Danny Hurley and his UConn Huskies. Wow. Who would have ever known that they were going to do this? Danny knew. He had a really good idea. So pretty cool stuff. Miami, Florida Atlantic, UConn, and San Diego State in the Final Four. First time no team seeded better than four is going to the Final Four. Woohoo! Should be a great time. Can't wait. It's going to be a blast. Hey, Chris. Hey, Wade. Nice to have you join us here today. Let's see. And last on my positive side, again, another post on the Facebook Bicycle Talk page. Goats on cobbles. Goats on cobbles, you say? What does that mean? 40 goats and sheep are working to weed 2,300 meters of cobblestones. Poop? Anyway, it's there. Check it out. Yeah, the Paris-Roubaix is coming. The cobblestones are filled in the cracks with all sorts of green stuff, which needs to be eliminated. So what a brilliant idea. Let's put the animals to it and have them take care of it. The only concern I have is, whew, man, the poop. Not good. You know, I grew up on a farm. My uncle had a lot of sheep, and I can tell you right now, they poop a lot. They eat a lot, they poop a lot. And I hope that there has been some sort of criteria for cleaning the cobbles off after the goats and sheep do their thing. But anyway, I thought that was kind of funny. It is posted on the Facebook page. You should check it out. It's fun. It's all good fun. And now, last but not least, on our entries into our show here, the Mechanical Minute and Cycling Tips. All right. It's time to address that one-by issue. Any of you who are riding bicycles now and have currently upgraded to some of the new bikes that are out there, especially if it's a cyclocross bike or a gravel grinding bike, you know what I'm talking about. Anybody else out there goes, what in the world are you talking about? Well, the one-by is one gear in the front and a bunch of gears in the back, but a very, very large variety of gears. If you ride a mountain bike, if you ride a cross bike, if you ride a gravel grinder, it's kind of become the only option you have, or I guess there's probably other options out there, but one of the few options that you have when you're buying that new bike because of the great range of gears on the back. So, how do I feel about this? Well, of course, Pedalin' Ron always has an opinion. I'm just going to put in here, just so you know, pros, better gear range, smoother gear transitions, resulting in better climbing performance. Cons, extra complexity with the maintenance of a front derailleur, additional gear shifter on the handlebars, and a higher chance of chain drops. So, that's why people go to one-bys, because no front derailleur, there's no chain drops, there's, you know, less of that problem there. But I have got my take on the matter too, and I got a little piece here I'll probably jump right into the show with to get us going, just to talk about it a little bit, because I'm just like feeling a little like, I don't know if I like it. But anyway, well, you know, I've always got an opinion. I always do. Some people out there listen to me because of that. Some of you are offended by me because of it. Oh, well, that's the way it is. Here's my take on the matter and my personal solution to the matter. So here I am riding an old classic Tom Ritchie Swiss Cross cyclocross bike. Love the bike. Great bike. Not 100% on the fork, but for the most part, I just really, really love the bike. I have more positive things to say about it than I do negative things, just that minor complaint on the front fork. But one of the huge positives, should it matter, I know this is silly, but should it matter, is how many people came up to me yesterday at the event that I was working and looked at the bike and went, oh my God, that is just a beautiful bike. And it's an old school cross bike. Yeah, you're right. It has rim brakes on it. Remember rim brakes? Yeah, well, anyway. Everyone's, what can I say? Not everyone, but many people's disc brakes were squealing like crazy yesterday going through the muck and quagmire that we had to deal with on the Natrog Epic. But on the other hand, mine were just going crunch, 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 because I was grinding all sorts of crud and everything into the rims. And so a little noisy in there. But I liked my noise better than I liked their noise. That's another story. So my personal solution for this was, I'm looking at all these bikes coming through these extremely low gears. I'm looking at my bike and going, how can I do this without going one by? Because I didn't want to go one by. I looked at it and went, hey, you know, I just don't like it. And I don't really have much of a problem with dropping chains. I do have to make yet another derailleur change on the front derailleur on my bike to make it work even more smoothly than it does right now. But I still have a two sprocket drivetrain in the front. What I did to solve the low gear problem was, first of all, put a 34 tooth cog in the back. So, you know, that's a pretty low gear, but just wasn't low enough. So I took an old triple crank set and I took the outer ring off, and I'm riding on the two inner rings. So my biggest gear on the bike is a 34 tooth gear on the outside. But I got to tell you, a 3411, if you crank it out at 110 RPMs, you're going over 20 miles an hour. It really isn't a problem for me, especially if I'm using it as a gravel grinder or as a cyclocross bike. I can't go that fast anyway, so it doesn't really matter. So anyway, but on the inside chainring on that bike is a 22. And a 22 34 is a pretty low gear, lower than many of the gravel grinders that were out there yesterday, including the people that I was with, who were having a lot of problems on the hills. And they had these brand new, beautiful bicycles. They had one by gearing on them, and when they got to the really steep stuff, they just couldn't do it. So, and I just dropped down to that little baby gear, and I could just spin by them without any effort whatsoever. So, am I sold on one by yet? Guess not. No, I don't like the one by yet. I'm not there. So, I can still have my old school cyclocross bike, get out there and do what I have to do, and have the gearing that I need to do it with. I'm pretty psyched. So, looks like Franny's on. She must be sitting on her Facebook in another room because her back is really out. Give Franny a shout out for her back. And, we're sorry you're not feeling good. So anyway, what else do I have here on my list? That's my one by thing. And I'll go back to this thing because there's a bunch more things I want to talk about. I'm a really, really not super thrilled about the fact that that SRAM has made it possible to, well, positive side, one hanger. I complained about that earlier. One hanger, super simple. Gotta buy a new bike. I don't like that. I don't like the gotta buy a new bike. Somebody out there figure out a way to hook up SRAM's one by system onto a conventional bike. And if you know about that, please send over the information for me, because I have not yet found that in my research. And I'd love to hear what your solution might be for the new SRAM drivetrain. It's pretty cool. I'm not going to tell you anything different. It's big, big hit at the Taipei show this year. We have more of that later on in the show. I'll talk about that a little bit more. I got some highlights to go over that I jotted down here. So, anyway, as we go on here, Mechanical Minute and cycling tips, as you know it, one of the big cycling tips, which I brought up a couple of times and Richard also yesterday, because we live up here in northeastern Connecticut, which is a quieter place to ride a bike, and it is traditionally known as the Quiet Corner, which is why Richard's ride was called the Natchog Epic or the Quiet Hell. We don't have a lot of people up here. Because we don't have a lot of people out here, we have more space up here. Yeah, I know, you need to think, Connecticut? How can there be space in Connecticut? Well, there is, but I'm only telling you folks about it because I only want to tell cyclists about it, because if you want to come here, I'd love to ride my bike with you, because this is a great place to ride your bike, as discovered yesterday yet again. So anyway, but because of that, we also have a lot of horses up here. A lot of people own horses. A lot of people's farms are adjacent to the airline trails or the Natchog Forest or all these lovely places where there's dirt roads and trails and nice stuff. Well, that's where we were yesterday. So we were on a lot of that terrain. And whenever there was a, this was a segmented ride, so there were segments that you could go for and try to, you know, beat the others. It was the race within the race thing. And, but Richard was like super cool and protective about not putting segments on the airline trail. So that was good. But so you know, and we made this announcement beforehand, how do you deal with horses on a trail when you're out riding your bike? We're definitely among the most vulnerable, the road users out there. However, we, you know, people are starting to learn how to share the road and we're starting to get that all together. But very, very, very few people know how to deal with horses because it's weird. It's just weird. So what do we do? What do we do? When you're passing or coming up to a horse, you need to start communication right away. The horse can hear you as a human. It understands that because a human is sitting on the horse and communicating with them. When they sense an object coming at them at high speed or coming from behind, they don't know what you are. They really don't have any idea. So here it is. The animal is unlikely to see or hear you, especially when you're quietly approaching from behind. A simple greeting goes a long way and is appreciated by the rider as well as the horse. So before you get too close, or you could startle them in any way, you need to, like, get yourself one of those really cool bells that really rings from a long ways back and you can hear it a quarter mile away. Those are very cool. And you want to make sure that the equestrian that's riding on the horse and the animal can see you as you approach. If the horse has indeed been frightened by you, give the rider a chance to calm the animal down and move out of the way before you move forward. Here's a beautiful thing, and I got this from a couple of people that came up and commented to me after I made the announcement. They said, great, great comment, Ron. Really, really cool. Here's what I do. What they do is they come upon a horse, they dismount their bicycle, and they walk or stand by the side of the trail and let the horse pass through and have a conversation with the person on the horse. One guy told me, he said, I've been doing that for years. He said, people are just so incredibly appreciative of it. And, you know, we like to ride our bikes in remote areas, so we're going to run into horses. So I figured out a way to deal with it. So you just need to heed the riders or even a carriage driver. Like if you're, although I got to tell you, the Amish with their carts, those horses are brilliant around bicycles and traffic in general. They really do a good job, but they're used to it. They've been doing it all the time. So think of at least 5 feet of space. I know it's a big number, but you know what? You would expect the same from a speeding car. Why not give the same respect to the horse and the horseback rider? That's really the best way to go. And large groups of cyclists are really, really scary to horses, like crazy scary. So you really want to pass wide if you're going to pass, and you want to slow down. Your speed on your bike is not nearly as important. Remember this. I'm going to say this in all directions of cycling. Your speed on your bike is only important to you. Your speed on your bike with everyone else is a real problem with everyone else. So let's ride like we're riding for everyone else instead of riding for just ourselves. So slow down, you know, make yourself visible. Make yourself visible by voice so they can hear you, so they can understand what you have. Wear your fluorescent reflective clothing. They can see you a lot easier if you're off in a distance. A little blinky light in the front helps a whole lot when you're coming in at them from, you know, in opposing directions. And, you know, it happens. And if you're out riding on the trails and you see fresh hoof prints on the trail, there's probably a good chance there's a horse up front, up ahead of you. So just be smart. Be smart. And please heed this. This is really, really, really pretty important stuff. And that way we get to share the trails with other people who like to be on the trails, which that's not a terrible thing, is it? All right. So now we're going to go back and we're going to jump into the show here. I'm going to talk about the UDH, that Universal Derailleur Hangers. Let's go back to description here. What is a UDH? All right. UDH is a system developed by SRAM with the intent of standardizing hangers across all mountain bikes. All right. This is something that should have been done 20 years ago. With the advent of all of these bicycles coming in with the replaceable derailleur hangers, and it started in the mountain bike world because the mountain bike world were, those were the people that were having falls a lot on derailleurs, you know, not that you could control it, which side you fall on, but they'd fall over and then they'd bend the hanger and then the derailleur would go into the rear wheel and then the can of worms has been opened and it's like you got rear wheel replacements, you've got rear derailleur replacements. In many cases back then, you might even have frame replacements because of it. So the bicycle industry comes up with this great idea. They're going to build a replaceable hanger that you can bend easily, which is, of course, still a problem, but you don't ruin your frame in the process. Of course, the steel frame revolution went away, although it is back. I'll only say that because I love my steel bikes. And steel bikes, by the way, just so you know, when you bent your hanger on a steel bike, you had a strong possibility of being able to bend that hanger back and still have it function well. If you had a skilled mechanic that knew how to align the rear derailleur correctly or a frame builder that knew how to align it correctly, you were usually good to go and back out on your bike again. Aluminum bikes come along, carbon bikes come along, and it's a different story. So everybody designed their very own, specific to their model and their brand, derailleur hanger. Stupid. That's my industry that I work for 44 years. Not the smartest thing they did. But now there are thousands of different hangers out there to replace on your bike. And if you have a bike that's more than 3 years old, good luck trying to find the one that works for your model and your brand. It's been a real pain in the butt. So finally, SRAM says, enough is enough. We have a direct mount, goes right into the rear axle, derailleur that goes on the bike, and we no longer have this problem. Kind of, sort of. There's always going to be problems. But the main issues were that every bike manufacturer used a different design, sometimes even across their models, which meant sourcing them could be a pain, as well as inability to share parts out on the trail. Wheels Manufacturing, by the way, they've got probably the best selection. They have a lot of good, and their hangers, I like their hangers a little better too, because they tend to be made out of a better material than most of the hangers are. So they'll bend, but they don't break as easily, and they don't bend on their own as easily. Another story for another time. If you're a bike mechanic, you know what I'm talking about. But anyway, they come out with a derailleur hanger that is now universal. And it just basically, it isn't a hanger. It's just your derailleur bolts onto the frame. The problem is you have to have the compatibility. It says here is the, now there's a company here called Cro-Mag. And they have a system here that is, they claim that it is compatible to fit on all mountain bikes spec'd for UDH. So I did find this, and we'll see. I'm going to investigate this a little further to see if it's really true. I would assume that they have some sort of a patent agreement with SRAM so that they don't step on their toes. If it is true, I will have more information about these guys in the future, and I'll explain to you exactly what it is that they're doing, because that is the problem. Otherwise, you need a new bike. You need a new frame in order to utilize this cool new system. And I would think that this new system, if SRAM is going to be patent friendly on this and sell the rights off for not a lot of money, will become a norm in the industry. That's really what I'm hoping for. I'm hoping that everybody can utilize this and we can get rid of this multitude of, you go into a bike shop and they'll have a poster hanging on the wall. And it's a picture of all the different hangers that are out there. And when you come in with your broken or your bent hanger, you take that and you hold it up again and you try to figure out which one it matches to. This is insanity, folks. This is not smart. And it's a big shout out to the bicycle industry for being dopes, basically, about this whole thing. So anyway, that's your universal bicycle hanger. I told you I would talk about it a little bit more. That's what I've got. I'll do some more research, or if you have information that will head me in the right direction here on this, we need a solution to this problem, because it's not going to hang real well, right? Trailer hangs off the bike. Anyway, enough of that. So that's it. That's my, that's my UDH story. I'm sticking with it. And now we will move forward to something else on the calendar here for today, including grabbing a quick drink of water. I am a little hoarse. I've announced events all weekend long, and I'm a little spoken out, plus working with people on bike rides and talking with them. I'm a little out. So I'm going to grab a quick drink of water out of my beautiful, beautiful Mansfield Hollow Cyclocross pint glass. Way better. That's nice. So we go on to the Natchog Epic. Oh, the Natchog Epic. Yeah, what a great time. Oh my God. The sizes of the fields were incredible. Incredible. I think that my field, which was the shorter ride of the bunch, there were some pretty serious people out there. There was an 80-mile ride, there was a 60-mile ride, and there was a 30-mile ride. My ride was about 32 miles. It was claimed to be somewhere around 1,800 feet of climbing. I got 2,000 by the time I was done. Can't think of it, but I may have gone back down a hill to help somebody back up a hill. Maybe that's why that happened, but there were a lot of double-digit climbs. There was an incredible climb early in the ride that everyone had to go up. It was really within, I don't know, 2 to 5 miles of the start, and it was hard. It was steep. It was hard, and of course it was all washed out, and we had a significant, probably half inch of rain the day before, so it was a lot of mud. There was a lot of water running down the trail. I'm going to call this more of, instead of a gravel road, I'm going to call it more of a logging trail, is what it looked like. It was tricky, and you really kind of had to know what you're doing. And I got some tips on this too, just to share with you, because I have been experiencing riding in situations like this a lot, because I'm not one to turn off to the side when I see a dirt road. I usually turn onto the dirt road to see where it goes, because I like exploring and it's really fun. And I have taken a number of dirt roads that have turned into trails, because the road sort of ends, but hey, it was on the map, so I know it comes through at X point. I'm just going to figure out how to get there, and I just do it. Which is half the fun of riding a bike. I mean, it's just, you know, just riding your bike. That's all. By the way, I don't care how fast I go. If I just want to point that out, if you haven't caught on to that yet, it's really more about the experience than anything else. So they have this section that you start out on. It's called the Cuisinator, named aptly after the famous food processor. This descent was within the first few miles on the Epic Ride, which was the longest ride. So we let all these riders go on the Epic Ride. An hour later, we let all the riders go on the next ride. And then an hour later, we let the next set go, which was me. So by the time we got there, hundreds of cyclists had been through this thing. I was supposed to wait at the top of the Cuisinator. That was after getting over the big hill, which was a lot of work. And then I was going to wait on a turn point where I could guide people who were feeling less enthusiastic about going down it. I could lead them on an alternative route, and then we would pick up the route a little bit further down the road because it all came back together. I waited. Nobody wanted to do it. They wanted to go down. They wanted to go down the Cuisinator. So down we went, and we continued, and it was really sloppy, and you really had to pay attention. But some things that are learned from this, and I just saw many people falling over. I saw many people sliding out because they got themselves into way too deep mud. I saw people walking, a lot of people walking down it because they just couldn't handle it. But They had to do it. And to give you an idea how rough this was, just to give you an idea, at the end of the day, when this thing was all over, Richard had one of his support four-wheel drive vehicles winched out so he could drive home.
Yeah, yeah.
So it was too much for a four-wheel drive vehicle, and we rode our bikes on it. It was a blast. I had fun. This is my world. I've been riding cyclocross since the mid to late 70s, and you know, put something down that is challenging in front of me, and I take on the challenge, and I really, really have a fun time with it. So it was good. It was all good. So anyway, here we are. So we got our group there. Like I said, hundreds of people have been through, and how do you handle this? Well, an interesting thing that no one thinks about is your bike is already wet. There's a lot of puddles. You're going to get wet. And if you're looking for the hard pack underneath the wheel, don't ride in the mud. Ride where the stream is. Why do you ride where the stream is? Simple, simple thing. The stream has been cleaning off all the gravel underneath, so you have a hard packed surface to ride on. When you're riding up the hills, it makes it easier to climb without having your rear wheel spin out. When you're going down the hills, it makes you easier to hold track on your line when you're going down the hills. Don't ride in the mud unless you have to. Ride on the hard pack. Always look for the hard pack and where it is. If you can't see the hard pack because it's in a stream, just ride in the stream. It's there. It's under there. It's all cleaned off real nice, but washed by the water coming down the hill. It really is a simple solution to the problem. And I saw so many people make the mistake of riding in the mud. The second they ride in the mud, the rear wheel starts fishing around the wheels. Some people had gravel wheels on that had limited tread because there was a lot of road riding on this. So they put on their, you know, their slicker tires. Nightmare. Not the answer. Not the answer at all. So anyway, follow the best path. And the best path might not be the driest path, but you'll get you through. And yeah, my bike's a little bit of a mess. I don't care. I don't care. That's what it's for. That's exactly what it's for. So anyway, you should do that. And putting on, you know, riding my bike through that and having that super low gear when I needed that super low gear, I could just like dance through it. It was really not hard at all. And I saw a lot of these people, once again, with the one-by systems that ran out of gears trying to go up the thing. So, hey, Kim's on. And Kevin, too. They were both there yesterday. We all got to ride in the Natchog Epic. It was fun. It was really fun.
And nice to see you guys there. And big shout out to Kevin for riding with me. He rode with me a lot of the way. And it's fun riding with Kevin out there because he lives out there. And he's pointing out, you know, houses of the rich and famous that live out there. A lot of people hide up here in northeastern Connecticut. And there's some beautiful estates out here. But anyway, it was just a blast. It was just such a good time. And Kevin says there was a lot of gear falling off of bikes in that section. Yeah, there were water bottles, there were gloves, there were bags. There, you know, people were losing their stuff, so to speak, in through there. And also things off their bicycles. It was just, I loved it. I just thought it was a blast. I really had a good time. And big shout out to Bob for finding some of these places, because he found some very special places to ride your bike over the weekend. It was fun. It was really a lot of fun. So, and I got to explore something else too. I got to explore the northernmost section of the airline trail north of Putnam, which was kind of cool. It's like, you know, it's in some places are in really good shape, some places are not. But it's a part of the airline trail which I had not experienced yet, and it was really cool. We entered it up by the Thompson Dam, and which is a huge project from the Army Corps of Engineers for a flood control project. Gorgeous place, just absolutely beautiful views. It's great. This whole ride was beautiful. It was absolutely beautiful. People we were riding with kept commenting on, where are the cars? Not very many cars up this way. So really cool, because you don't have to deal with cars. We did deal with one person who crowded us pretty closely right there at the dam. And I kind of gave him the, you know, push it out kind of signal. Didn't flip him off. I just motioned, and he had to look back because he knew what he did. He buzzed us, and he was looking for a reaction. Well, my reaction was push your car out. So I'm waving my left hand, pushing out towards traffic, and trying to get him an idea that maybe he should have pushed out. He flipped us off. And so then I gave him the come back and talk to me, which is the reach your hand up in the air and beckon them to come back and have a conversation, because I would love to have a conversation with him. But, you know, foolish people do foolish things and are generally, they're cowards. So they won't come back and talk to me because they're afraid of me, because I'm a, you know, 132-pound guy on a bicycle. I'm really scary. But anyway, for what it's worth, we only had one car encounter. And what was that person driving? Kevin can tell you. A pickup truck, of course. It was a pickup truck. Why is it always a pickup truck? What is wrong with you people? Anyway, not all of you. I understand. I have a lot of contractor friends that drive pickup trucks and need them and use them for work. And I get that. I get that. But they're also, they tend to be more level-headed people. I don't know who this guy was. He did not have plates that were Connecticut plates. I'll leave it at that. We're very close to the state of Massachusetts and the state of Rhode Island, and they weren't Rhode Island plates. But that's who he was. That's what he did. Why? Why? What's your point? What's your point? Get out and ride your bike. You'd be a lot happier. Anyway, let's move on this. It was just such a great ride. It was so beautiful. It's spring here, so the weather started really warming up, and I was a little overdressed, but that's all right. I'm always a little overdressed, and it wasn't a bad day. I was on my bike. It's never a bad day when you're on your bike, right? It's a good thing. So anyway, let's move on here. What do I have? Yeah. We have some bicycle racing going on out there in the world. We're in the classics. Lots of things going on. Yesterday was the Ghent-Vegelhern. And the Ghent-Vegelhern. And Christopher Laporte and Wout van Aert dominated with a 1-2 finish after a 50-kilometer attack. Holy cow. So they just happen to be on the same team, which is the Jumbo team, which is just still crazy. Jumbo-Visma is it has to be the most powerful professional team on the road today. It's really tremendous. So Van Aert says, we just rode full on for the last 8 to 10 kilometers, maybe. And then we were able, then we were quite sure we had the victory. Van Aert had won on Friday, and his eyes are on the races that are coming up. And Christoph also had a difficult start to the season with sickness, and he's such a team player in every decision. So the coolest thing about it, and why I love bicycle racing so much, why do I love it so much? I'll tell you why. Because they rode together. They rode off the front, they rode together, and when they got to the finish line, they put their arms up in the air with each other as they crossed the line, and Wout van Aert didn't sprint against Christopher Laporte. They just rolled across, making sure that Laporte had crossed the line before him so he'd get the win. Bicycle racers, when doing the appropriate things, are the coolest athletes in the world. How cool is that? This younger rider, just getting into the, you know, just getting into the whole Jumbo team and all, was given this this victory by a veteran rider. I can't believe I'm calling Van Aert a veteran rider now, because, you know, he's really not that old, but he's been on the scene for a while. And he got the victory over it. It's just beautiful. It's just such a beautiful thing. In the women's race at the Vegelheim, I got to make sure, Vegelheim, not Heim, was Marlen Roeser. And she took a wrong turn on the course. But she was so far away, and she claimed a massive solo victory. And she says, looking back at her brief detour, I didn't see the guy showing the way. I went straight, and I was wrong. That's not good. I was not concentrating. I did not panic, but it was a little scary. But I had a feeling that they didn't show well at that turn. So I don't know what happened. She missed a turn. I didn't watch the video of it because I was away doing an event all weekend, so I wasn't able to take a look and review some of the footage. But, you know, bottom line is you always got to be watching where you're going, even if you're in the very lead of the race and you got pace vehicles and all that you got to keep your eyes on the road, man. You never know. It's really, really, really tough. But anyway, so that's what happened there. It was really, really fun. There's other great pro race results going on out there. We've got some stuff coming up, which I'll mention in the event calendar, because, you know, the Cobble Classics are still out there. The Classics are still happening. And we got two biggies coming up in the next two weekends. And I'm just so excited. It's so much fun. And the cobbles are getting cleaned by the goats and sheep. Almost, kind of, maybe. We hope. Hopefully someone's sweeping the beans off afterwards. Goats and sheep leave beans behind, by the way. anyway, here we go. More interesting industry news right now. So the Taipei Bike Show. I told you I'd talk about the Taipei Show a little bit, because the Taipei Show is kind of fun. It's, you know, where you get to see some of the new cool stuff that's out there, and you get to see some weird things, and you get to see some fun things. I have a few of them listed here today. I'll have more next week, because the show kind of keeps going on and it's not over with yet. So I'll give you a little bit more highlights from the show. From the first day, though, I can tell you that that new SRAM Eagle system and the universal derailleur hanger thing is a big, big deal. A lot of people are looking at it. No hangers on the back of the bike. I mean, it makes sense. It makes a lot of sense. I'm just not enthused about the fact that it eliminates folks like myself and others that I know. They have an older bicycle, and now in order to go here, they've got to, you know, get a new bike, a new frame, whatever it is. Doesn't sit real well with me. But You know, and the other problem that I find in the bicycle industry, and this has been for as long as I've been in it, is the fact that then you, especially Shimano is so good at this, and that is they eventually stop making product for the old bikes. That's just, you know, that's kind of a pain in the butt. Good thing for bike swaps and good, solid, real old-time bike shops that keep old parts in stock, because I've been collecting them over the years. Good thing for that. But, you know, it's just kind of, I don't know, shouldn't have to be that way. But it creates too much of a disposable society as far as I'm concerned. Limits mixing and maxing custom drivetrain from Wade. Okay. We'll check that out. Yeah, I not sold. Not sold. But you know what? It's okay. Just don't stop making the old stuff that works on my bike, please. And everybody else's bike. And lots of people's bikes that I know. Please don't stop making the old stuff. So that's a big hit. Lots and lots and lots. And I can't believe it. I watched a video on this. Tools. Like every tool you could possibly imagine. There was this one pump display. There were 60 pumps on display. 60! Not six, 60! How many pumps can you make? How many designs of pumps do you need? All I need is a pump that will either fit on my frame, which I have on my old school steel bike just because it's classic, or one that will fit in my seat bag in the back. I'm not a big believer in or user of CO2 cartridges because, once again, we're creating waste, and that makes no sense to me at all. Buy yourself a good pump. There are some brands out there that make exceptionally good mini pumps, and it's all you really need, but make sure you get yourself a good one. You can also waste a ton of money on a pump that just isn't very effective. Stay away from your discount store, stay away from online, and go to your local bike shop. And hopefully they will be picky enough to only sell something really, really good. So we'll see. We'll see. Let's see. Billy still wants a bench seat and shift on your steering wheel of your car. Stop making them. All right, Billy. Moving on. Okay, lots of, like I said, there's also lots of weird things that show up at the Taipei show. And here's a really cardboard wheel set and wooden bicycle frames. They fall into weird. They definitely fall into weird. Why? We don't know. Cardboard's recyclable. Okay, that's good. Cardboard's also not good if it gets wet, I wouldn't think, but maybe they're treated. Who knows? Not sure. Does that still make them recyclable? Not so sure. But anyway, cardboard wheels and wooden bicycle frames. Very, very interesting. They looked cool. I gotta say, they look cool. But if they're worthless, then they're not really cool. They're just something you hang on the wall for the Friday night dinner party. And you go, ooh, look what I have that I'll never ride. It's simple. Simple, silly, dumb. So, e-bikes that look like regular bikes. We're getting better. They're looking better, folks. There's some stuff out there that you take a look at them and you go, that's an e-bike? Well, how far can you go on it? Well, pretty far. Well, where's the battery? Well, it's kind of buried into the frame and they do it, you know, they're making them look a little nicer. Looks like a regular road bike to me. So there's some kind of cool stuff coming down the road as far as that goes. Pity the person that shows up on a group ride with one of them and I have to have a conversation with them about it because they're riding off the front. That's enough said there. I'll move on. If you need the e-bike, I get it. If you're out there to prove to others that you can ride faster than they can because you have a motor on your bike, I'm not happy with that. And I really don't want to know about you. So anyway, what it's worth. Ride off the back with your e-bike. Just ride in the back of the pack. Help others. Be helpful. Be creative. Be positive. Anyway, lots of indoor trainers with the rear wheel insert. You know, we've seen them all. Everybody's Zwifting. Everybody's riding indoors, and they want a more sophisticated trainer to ride on. Obviously, the trainers where you take the rear wheel off your bike and you slide your bike in have so much more sophistication and development as far as wattage and, you know, making it more like you're riding on the road. It helps. It definitely helps. And there's just a ton more of them out there, which is only going to mean what? It's going to mean the prices are going to continue to drive down because of availability of lots and lots of product. And some of the older product is going to become not up to date, so the prices may fall on that. That's good news if you're an indoor rider or have to be an indoor rider for some reason. It may be a work thing. It may be a weather thing. You know, there's a lot of people out there that after when COVID hit, they went indoors with their bikes. I tried to get outdoors as much as possible because I want the fresh air. I want to be out of the contaminated indoors. But another story, you know, we're all different. And if it hits in the wintertime, it's cold. So you choose it. You go with what works. Another little shout out here since I'm talking about trainers, and that is if you have been on a trainer all winter long and that has been your sole source of exercise that is bicycle related, that first ride on the road, that's going to be an eye opener. The hills on your trainer are not the hills on the road. And it's an eye opener, and we all go through it. I've been through it. You know, I've been out on the road a few times this year, but the hills were big yesterday. They were really big. And I know they'll get smaller, technically not smaller, but they will get smaller as far as ease of getting up them. But I saw some pretty big numbers on my heart rate monitor yesterday. And that I haven't seen for a long time. And I certainly didn't see indoor cycling. So it's, you know, it's just a different game when you get out there in reality. But what it is. Let's see what else. 5-inch wide fat tires. For you fat tire enthusiasts who have the big fat tire bikes, yeah, you can get tires up 5 inches or more in size. Crazy, crazy stuff. And then one of the other highlights of the Taipei show, and I will again have more in future episodes, but wireless hydraulic brakes. Okay, so you got a hydraulic brake, but you don't have a hydraulic line going to the brake caliper. You've got a Bluetooth connection, and when you press on the lever, it talks to the caliper. So the master cylinder talks to the slave cylinder if you're a hydraulic brake or clutch fan from car days. And that's how the brake works. Interesting, intriguing, really quite intriguing. Once again, then, we're going to fluid and we're going to disc brakes, which, you know how I feel about that. My brakes work great. I had no problem yesterday riding through crazy stuff. I mean, just stupid, stupid stuff. I didn't have any problem with my brakes. They work great. They work just fine. One quick revolution of that wheel around on my caliper brakes, and my brakes grab just like anything else. And I won't have to replace the pads after I use them 3 or 4 times. Anyway, there I go. Opinionator on. Gets out of control there. But anyway, let's see what else we got here that's left on my list that we can talk about. That's pretty much most of what I have here. We got some stuff coming up that's pretty important and should certainly know about. The Taipei show, actually, I think the Taipei show officially, the physical show, has ended as of the 25th. But I'll have some more information for you because I only have results from day one on there. So I'll have a little bit more next week and we can fill you in on that one. There is still a digital show that is going on until the 7th of April. So, you know, there's still ways of highlighting things and finding out more information. So kind of psyched to check that out a little bit more there and see what's going on. The Tour of Flanders is coming up next weekend. Yeah, the Tour of Flanders. Classic race. Cobblestone finish, you know, just 10, 20%, 25%, I don't know. Huge grade on cobbles. Last year, Matthew Vanderpoel showed us what it was like to go from an average wattage output of 390 watts for the entire race, and then show us what 1500 to 1600 watts can do at the right time. And we're not talking about sprinting for the finish line. He did it on the hill and on the cobbles. It was impressive. It was so, so cool. But anyway, that's coming up next weekend. And of course, the Queen of the Classics is getting closer. It is Saturday, April 8th, with the men's Paris-Roubaix, for the women's Paris-Roubaix, and Sunday, April 9th, for the men's Paris-Roubaix. So here we go. Fun stuff. Remember, the 106th edition of the 2023 Giro Italia begins on Saturday, May 6th, and it will begin with an 18.5-mile individual time trial. So that's coming up. The 110th edition of the 2023 Tour de France will begin on July 1st. And it's going to be marking that this is going to be in Basque country. Second time it's taken place in Basque country. Expected to finish in Paris around July 24th. The 78th edition of the Vuelta a España starts in Barcelona, August 26, 2023. So, and it also starts with a 14-kilometer but team time trial. So that'll be fun too. Locally, the Hop River Mountain Bike Race is on April 15th. It's the first of the CCAP Mountain Bike Series. I got to talk with Brian Wolf yesterday because he was at the event that I was at, and he's very excited for the mountain bike series coming up. There's going to be, I think, four races for the kids. I think it's part of the way that works. Other things that we have going on here, the International Ride of Silence is on May 17th, 2023. And our ride will start off, and the only Connecticut ride so far, will start off at the parking lot of the Mansfield Community Center at 10 South Eagleville Road in Storrs. My friend Kevin, who I rode with yesterday, shout out to Kevin, I know he's watching. He is the event organizer. He's done a great job already. A lot of people know about it. I think we're going to get a crowd. I want to see a crowd. If you are local and you can come to it, or maybe even you want to base your night ride around it and just show up there, do the Ride of Silence, and then finish your night ride, come see us. Come check it out. It's a really cool thing, and we are there to honor those that have been either hit or killed by automobiles or motorized vehicles that are out there. So keep that on your calendar. Also, the bicycle game on the early history of bicycles in Hartford at the Connecticut Historical Society. Way cool. Still on. Still going. The National Bike Summit is going on at this moment. So that's kind of a cool thing in Washington, D.C. Finishing points. Don't forget about that bicycle game at the Hartford Historical Society. Just big shout out to Richard and the Natchog Epic. There's going to be another one of these events in the fall on the 8th, I believe, of October. It'll be a similar type event. So just keep watching Bike Reg for posted gravel rides because there's all sorts of cool stuff coming up. The views expressed in this program do not present the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. I am Peddler Ron. You've been listening to Bicycle Talk, a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you've been listening to this on Facebook Live, you can leave comments down here below, or you can send me an email at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. If you'd like to contribute information to the show, drop me an email. Let me know what you're thinking, and we'll go forward from there. This is Peddlin' Ron. Remember, keep that rubber side down, the wind at your back. Get out and ride your bike. It really could save your life. Coming up on 2 years here very soon. I'll talk to you soon about it. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS Storrs, and WHUS.org. Thank you so much for listening.